Next Door Podcast.
I really wish that was the introduction song. I wish we had like an 80s quick jingle. Comedy Store Podcast, guys. Welcome back. Rick Ingram here on a Friday night at the Comedy Store. Who knows when you're going to get to listen to this? Probably Monday or Tuesday or later, but we're back. We're here. This is our first episode, I believe, since the extremely controversial John Caparillo episode. And with me today, Brenton Biddlecombe.
Hey, guys.
Comedy Store paid regular. I believe the first regular I've interviewed that's from the class younger than me.
Yeah.
I guess Francisco, but he wasn't
I was after him.
Yeah. He was closer, I think, to my era. As Argus would say, we got one of the young up-and-coming millennials here, which is always exciting. How are you, Brenton?
I'm good. Excellent. Good. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, man, for sure.
I had to walk up the stairs from my office to get here.
So. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize just how far into the depths, the corners of the building that people never know about this mm-hmm. podcast studio is. When I had Yaakov on, he was standing downstairs talking to, I don't know if she's the assistant talent coordinator or just the talent coordinator in charge of the main room in La Jolla.
Oh, Emily? Yeah, she's the talent coordinator for La Jolla, and then she's just the booker for the main room and room for off nights.
So she was standing with Yaakov, and Yaakov was like so confused. I said, yeah, we're actually up further. And he's like, there's further?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Four stories.
Yeah, it's crazy. I remember seeing this window when I worked the parking lot. Every once in a while, I think it was the accounting office then.
Yeah, when I got here, there was an accountant that worked up here like every day.
Yeah.
And
what they were doing, who knows?
Yeah.
But I do remember looking up here, and maybe once or twice a year, the light would be left on. And then everyone was like, whoa, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
Why is there a light on? And we would, of course, discuss ghosts, things of that nature, a very haunted past here.
Have you ever seen a ghost? I've been here 6 years. I've never seen anything. And I'm here late a lot. I'm here by myself all the time. I haven't seen anything.
I don't believe in ghosts per se, but this building has made me a lot more of a like a speculator where I'm like, I guess.
Yeah, there's definitely a dark energy here, but
the closest I had was Mark Hatchell and I, a guy who used to work here, a very funny guy. And we got hired the same time years ago, and we had to, you know, close down. If you worked, you had to close down the lights in the main room or whatever it was. And so you'd go to the backstage and you'd shut off the actual fuse switches or whatever it was, turn everything off. So one night we were working and he turned off the lights in the lobby. And I went and turned off the lights in the backstage area. And then it was pitch black. So it was very clear that we had successfully turned the lights off.
Yeah.
And then we walked back up front. We were kind of waiting around, probably smoking pot or something nefarious. And then Dean, the manager, was like, you guys got to turn the lights off in the main room. And it was one of those where I was like, well, we just did that. And so he's like, no, they're on backstage. So then I walk back and I'm like, oh, the light's on. And I'm like, what jackass went back there, turned the lights back on. And then, so I started walking backstage. And as soon as I got back onto the main room stage, then the lights shut off. But there was no one in the backstage area. So it was one of those things where I'm like, you know, and it's electrical issues. I'm sure this building has them. But at the same time, there's no reason why when you turn a fuse off, the light should turn on. And then once you get close enough, shut off again.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my moment where I'm like, I feel very uneasy. And I remember Hatchell standing in the back of the main room and he's like, dude, let's get out of here. I mean, like, yeah, all right. And again, the marijuana paranoia probably to some extent kicked in, but at the same time, it was one of those, you know, you had that. It suddenly felt really cold. Hair was standing up on the back of my mm-hmm. neck, where it's just like, oh, this is creepy. And then I had one incident in the green room of the belly room, where I was sitting with Sheezer, and we were sitting on the couches, whatever, and it was pretty late. It was dark. I don't know that we had any lights on other than like the hallway light.
Yeah.
So between the belly room and the green room. And we were sitting there, same situation, smoking pot. And heard the door open from the belly room. And both of us looked up at the exact same time because we both saw someone walking towards us and there was just nothing there. It was one of those things where it was like, whoa. Those are the only experiences I've ever had in my life where I was like, you know, maybe that shit is real. Mm-hmm. I've watched all those ghost hunters shows and just been like, this is the dumbest
garbage.
Shit of all time.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my interpretation prior, but if there was ever going to be a ghost, I would say it'd be in this building. Mm-hmm. You never had any sort of experience.
No,
I know you're here alone a lot, right?
I'm here alone a lot, but I'm also sober all the time. So
yeah.
I'm thinking clearly.
Yeah, I think that probably has a lot to do with it in general. And there's been so many stories over the years of people seeing ghosts. And at the same time, so many people wasted on various drugs.
Yeah.
I can only imagine 3 days high on cocaine. Never experienced that personally, but I would imagine that people are probably seeing things at that mm-hmm. point. So I met the person who got allegedly pushed down the stairs. I don't know if you've ever heard that story.
No.
Someone who worked, I think they were a phone guy. I'm not sure if they had a higher classification than that, but they claimed that they turned around at the top of the stairs, to the back stairs here, and there was a ghost there, and the ghost reached out towards them, and they fell down the stairs, and they sued the club, and Mitzi banned them.
Did he win the lawsuit?
I don't think he did, because I can. Once you're claiming
really,
that there was a ghost involved, I think the judicial system's kind of like, oh, cool, all right.
It's fun.
I believe all that happened was they ended up getting banned from the club. And I met them, they said they hadn't been here in 12 years or 13 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they were coming back, risking it. I think if I got pushed downstairs by a ghost, I'd probably just steer clear.
Back.
I mean, as much as this place is like, you know, the frat house, or a lot of people say when they come back and they haven't been here for years, it's like, oh, yeah, it's like going back to your high school or something. I think if I was assaulted by spirits, maybe I wouldn't go back to my high school.
Place doesn't like me.
Yeah. So hard to say, but that's as close, I guess, if I had to a ghost mm-hmm. story.
Yeah, I haven't had anything, and I don't think I'm going to have anything.
Probably not. I think sobriety probably is going to keep the spirits from getting to you. Not that the drugs and alcohol cause the spirits, but the spirits obviously attack those who are inebriated because, you know, that way people don't believe their story.
Yes.
Conspiracy theories at the Comedy Store. How long you been here?
Just over 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You're one of those guys where I guess it just seems like you've been around. You're here frequently enough when I'm here,
mm-hmm.
You've kind of become ingrained as part of the club. 6 years ago, you're how old?
I'm 28.
28. So you showed up at 22,
mm-hmm.
looking like Bieber.
Yeah.
That was my first remembrance of you, was like, who's this kid? You looked like a child.
I looked like I was 14.
Yeah. You had kind of a Bieber haircut. This was what in the kind of the shaggy comb over Bieber era.
Yeah.
This is even before Bieber was a huge douche. Still like a child icon, and mm-hmm. you are our Bieber. And I remember the first thing I remember thinking was, Barry Sobel's going to love this kid.
And he did.
Yeah. And that's what someone said. It's like, oh, no, yeah, Sobel already saw him. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, I bet. Would you come straight from college?
No, it was a weird story, actually. I came because of, I won a contest.
Okay.
That, you remember Jill Allen, and she was dating Dean at the time.
Sure.
And she was from Michigan, and that's where I started comedy. And, so she set it up that this club out in Michigan was doing a contest, and whoever won would come out to the store for a week, and she'd put you up on some shows. And I won it, and I came out, I was 21, and, I did my first spot in the belly room.
Me too.
And I'm sitting in the green room, and Bobby Lee comes in, and He sits down across from me. He looks at me for a minute and he goes, huh, when's the kid going up? I want to watch the kid go up. And so I go up and I have a good set and he's like sitting in there and I can hear him laugh and he has a very distinct laugh. And I get off stage and he grabs me and he goes, hey man, you need to move out here now. Like, I'll help you out. Just come out to LA. I don't care what your story is. Just move out here.
That's awesome.
And I dropped out of school. I had one semester left. I had 13 credit hours to go. And
nice.
I just came out here as soon as I could. I saved some money. And then I hung out here almost every night until they hired me. And it took about 7 months. And I lied to Dean and told him I could drive stick shift and I should work the parking lot. And
sure.
They put me in the parking
lot. A lie many of us have made.
Yes. I should point out, though, you can't do that anymore. Like, it's very strict and professional here now.
You have to, really? You have to be able to drive the stick?
You have to not lie on your resume because
wow.
They take stuff serious. People get written up here now. Like, this is a real job. Working at the Comedy Store isn't like what it used to be, where
yeah.
It was just you can get drunk and just kind of show up, and as long as you're standing in the room, you're okay. And now it's, you know, they take it very serious.
Yeah, that, I mean, that is a complete 180.
I mean, it's busy.
It is.
Now.
It's a different club.
Yeah.
When I worked here, I'm not gonna act like I didn't park cars and drink, because I definitely was doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I used to drink when I started here.
But there was no one here.
Yeah.
Even on like a Saturday night, there's only main room shows on Saturday. Even on a Saturday night, there would be, you know, maybe if you're lucky, 80 to 100 people in the main mm-hmm. room, and probably 20 to 30
in the OR. Yeah,
now they
do two shows, they do 700 people.
Yeah, they're selling out, so it's completely different. And we also were only getting $25 a night, no matter how many hours you worked at some sort of an illegal Asian child labor scheme.
I mean, I had a lot of hours shaved when I started.
Yeah.
I was putting in like 60, 70 hour weeks.
Love Gilbert to death. He was the master of removing hours that people worked.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think he got anything out of it. It was just like Gilbert's power. Like, yeah, you know, I don't think he was really working all those hours.
Yeah.
But I remember the same thing. Cause I remember we decided like, oh, we got to keep track of all of our hours so we can complain about the fact we're getting paid illegally.
I had a shoebox of all my time slips.
Yeah, smart.
Yeah.
And so. Somehow they still managed to get away with it for years.
But because of him and because of Jill, I'm out here. So,
which is crazy because I don't like thinking that Jill had any positive influence on anything. But now it seems like an intricate part of the club and someone who's really helped. I mean, you've really helped make the club what it is right now,
mm-hmm.
taking over what was probably the most inept social media aspect of the club, just really in no way benefited the club. And now it's great. You do a great job with
Thank
that
you.
As well. So, you know, don't ever insult Brenton on social media because you will get blocked.
You know, I've only blocked a couple of people.
Is that right?
And it was very recent.
What were they insulting the club? Did they insult you?
They were insulting lineups, and then one guy tonight.
I posted, blocked someone tonight.
I blocked someone
That's
tonight.
So great.
I've blocked
Fresh.
Two people now.
Wow!
And this guy, he's like, "Oh, no, Gary Shandling pop in tonight." So I was like, eh, "Fuck that! I'm not
get him
gonna,
out of there."
Yeah, I'm not going to deal with that. We have enough followers now that I'm not worried.
Yeah, it's. I should have grabbed a copy of the official Comedy Store comment, but Gary Shandling, who passed away yesterday. Is that right? Yesterday?
Yeah, he passed away yesterday.
He was a Comedy Store regular, and he was one of those guys that he's like a legendary Comedy Store guy. This is the official Comedy Store statement.
He did his first ever set here.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I know he was one of those guys that Mitzi made showcase 100 times.
Yeah, he did over 100 times. What I heard, which I thought was great, was she didn't like him because he was a TV writer.
Yeah.
And he would come in on potluck and everyone else loved him. So she would leave the room and then they'd bring him up so he could do some time before she came back in.
I mean, that's, you know, that's classic Mitzi. She's giving him a chance, but really not treating him probably fairly.
Yeah.
Comedy Store official statement regarding the passing of Gary Shandling. The Comedy Store deeply mourns the passing of a genuine part of our family. The great Gary Shandling meant so much to the store and the Shore family, and few comedians were more devoted to the store and Mitzi Shore than Gary. He was part Jewish American prince, part Jack Benny, with a dash of David Brenner. and some Oscar Wilde thrown in for good measure. His incredible sense of inventiveness, timing, and humor was surpassed only by his level of kindness, warmth, and generosity towards friends, young comics, audiences, and strangers. The Comedy Store will always remember and honor the great Gary Shandling, and his spirit will remain forever in our showrooms and in our hearts. I only met him one time. Well, I guess I met him twice, but I only had an interaction with him a couple times. One was at the 40-year reunion, mm-hmm. and the other was maybe a couple months before that. He came in one night, and I can't remember if it was maybe Frazier or Dom Herrera. Someone introduced me to him in the back hallway, and he commented that I was young, and I was probably already in my late 20s. I wasn't 30 yet, but I was definitely in my late 20s, and I looked younger than that, but I felt pretty old because I'd already been here for 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, he asked how long I'd been doing comedy. I said, I'd been doing it for a while. And he said, are you a paid regular here? And I already immediately started having like that, do I lie to him? Knowing his story with how many times Mitzi made him showcase and how many years he performed here before she made him a regular. And it was such to the point that Ari Shaffir showcased a lot of times, and the comment was that he was the Gary Shandling of our class, mm-hmm. because no matter how many times he performed, she never passed him. And I got passed the first time I ever showcased for Mitzi, and it was a complete fluke, and I in no way was deserving. It was just one of those lucky chances where it was like I had an okay set. She was in a good mood. She showed up specifically to pass Ari Shaffir that night. She passed Kirk Fox that same night, and she passed me. And I was just showcasing to not get fired from being a parking lot guy, doorman. But I didn't know whether I should tell him that or not. And I did. I said, yeah, I've been a regular here for 7 years. And he said, oh, wow, how many times did you have to showcase? I said, I was 21, and it was the first time I ever showcased. And he said something along the lines of like, oh, you're the young guy who can fuck off. And I just started laughing, and he was like, "No, I'm joking. Obviously, you lucky bastard." And mm-hmm. I was like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard the stories. You know, people. I don't know if it's exaggerated, but they say you know you had to showcase hundreds of times." And he was like, "That's probably accurate. I probably showcased went up in front of Mitzi 100 times before she passed me. And if it wasn't 100 times, it felt like 100 times." Mm-hmm. It was one of those moments where I was like, wow, that I'm so glad I didn't have that trajectory.
Well, I fit into the class where we didn't showcase. You were just kind of here.
Right.
And Tommy would eventually just say, okay, you're a paid regular now.
Right.
Usually you'd go down to La Jolla and then he'd give you a call and say, when you come back, you're going to call in for paid regular spots. And wow. That's kind of how it happened.
Yeah. See, I remember the era where he was claiming that Mitzi was watching tapes, and I knew for sure she wasn't watching
tapes. None of us had tapes.
But, yeah. You're like, oh, yeah, she watched your tape, the open mic. Paid or the employees and friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
People were like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was really...
How long have you been a regular?
October 2013.
Okay, so it'll be 3 years this year.
Mm-hmm.
I remember hosting the open mic years ago. It was probably, you'd maybe been here 2 or 3 years. And you were basically the only employee at that time who had a set that was, that I would deem a comedian the set. Everyone else pretty much was terrible. I remember bringing my wife. I don't know that we were married yet then, but I remember she used to come up here a lot, and she came one night when I hosted, she wanted to see me host. And that was her comment, was the only one who's any good is Brent, and the rest of them are terrible.
I miss you hosting, by the way.
It was good times.
The most entertaining host out of anybody who hosts that.
I think that's probably because I liked your set. I guess there's got to be some people who are not fans of me as a host, just due to my truth of their quality of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I think hosting is one of those things a lot of people don't know how to do it right. And maybe I don't know how to do it right, but I felt like I did.
You do it right for that room and for that show, though.
Yeah.
Where you're making fun of the person without being mean.
Yeah.
And you keep the show moving.
That's the thing is when you host, I feel like you work for the show.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Show. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of people treat it like it's makes it their show and they can do whatever they want. And you really, there's a relationship you have with the audience. I always looked at it like you have to be honest with them, because if you're not honest with them, they'll turn on you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put up a bunch of terrible comics and you don't address it, you don't address the fact that, yeah, look, some of these guys have no idea what they're doing, then the crowd's going to be like, if you go up there each time, be like, oh, this next guy's great, you're going to love him. And then they go up and bomb. And then you go up there after him and you're like, wasn't he great, everyone? Give a round of applause for Jake. And people are going to be like, what is this dude, an asshole? That guy was terrible. So you have to be honest with them. Mm-hmm. And if you know, there's going to be a few decent people. You just keep telling them, reminding them, we got some good comics coming up. We got to get through this. If you make it through it, you'll enjoy yourself. But it's also very wearing to host the open mic here. There's a lot of hanger-ons that expect things.
I mean, it's a 4-hour show for you.
Yeah.
And you get tired. You end up bringing up, I usually get between 50 and 60 people.
And you can't, they're each doing at least
3 minutes.
First part, they're doing 3 minutes. Yeah. So you really can't go
really
take a break
on that now too, because they made the show shorter for the employees. So everybody's 3 minutes across the board, unless it's like somebody big dropping in.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it was tough. You had to keep it going. And Tommy, I haven't hosted since Tommy wasn't in the cover booth, basically. Mm-hmm. But he more or less told like 10 to 20 people that he'd try and get them up during the open mic. So all these people showed up because Tommy had more or less kind of told them, like, oh, I'll see if I can get you up. And then a lot of the times he would do it and I'd show up and be like, well, so-and-so's here. You know, I told him to come in, but I only told him that because I know you won't put him up. And it's like,
so now they hate you.
Now they hate me. Which I guess I didn't care, but it's one of those things where it's just like, why don't you just tell people no?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell them it's the employees? And I'd try and get up. If I was lucky, I'd maybe 4 or 5 people who weren't employees or on the open mic would get up.
Mm-hmm.
And they were usually people that I knew, you know, for a while. People maybe I did open mic with would show up and I'd try and get them up. But it just wasn't, it became not fun because it was just too much having to deal with crazy, terrible people and delusional people who thought they were way better than they were. When I first started doing it, there was people coming through that they weren't that great then probably, but I felt like the caliber of comedian was higher. And maybe it's because I was not as good of a comedian. Mm-hmm. So my bar was lower. But I remember like TJ Miller, who's a very successful actor now. He used to always come in and be like, hey, you put me up? I'd be like, I'll try, man. I can't guarantee it. I'm way funnier than these people. I'd be like, yeah, I don't know what to tell you, man. Just hang out. And I don't recall anyone from that later era, though, that has gone on to do anything. So there's just a lot of people that drove me crazy. There's like 10 female comics who are terrible that had some relationship with Tommy in terms of him telling him, well, we'll try and get you stage time. They'd all show up. Oh, yeah, Tommy said he'd put me up. Like, yeah, well, you're not getting up. Mm-hmm. And I had a girlfriend, so there was no flirting your way in.
Yeah.
Which happens
quite often.
I've had
people try that on me, too.
Definitely. It rages you out, and the opportunities you see terrible comedians that you don't respect at all get infuriates you, especially when you work here and you like put in all these hours and effort, and then you're just seeing like Joe Schmo, who's never been a part of the club and isn't funny and isn't on TV.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for some reason they move
I
up.
I think what's unique about this place and that anger is that it breaks you down so much that if you can build yourself back up, you're going to be the best comic and that you could possibly be and you know, as good as anybody anywhere coming up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it,
my first
it definitely
intro,
drives you.
My first intro when I was an employee and I finally got up on stage for Potluck was this next guy. It's his first time. He's our newest employee. He's fucking awful. If you need to go to the bathroom, go now. You know, if you need to smoke, get out of here because he's not going to be good. This is not going to go well. Here he is.
Who was it? Who hosted?
It was Hinchcliffe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could. He had a way of kind of just being mean. He didn't really, there was no like trying to be fun about it. It was just like, he thought he was just going to roast
it. No,
everyone.
But it was entertaining at times. But the point is,
for sure.
Like, you know, no, a lot of my intros were that. I got a lot of Bieber intros. I got stuff that, like, the intro when I started here was funnier than anything I was going to say. And it made me work to the point where if they did, and everyone who hosted that would bring me up and insult me, they stopped after a while because my sets got better.
You
got
to earn it, yeah.
I earned it. And then if they made an asshole comment bringing me up, I was funnier than that and the audience would turn on the host.
Sure.
You know, so that's the good thing about that is it makes you work so much harder.
Yeah, I remember first time my parents ever watched me do comedy was... employee spot at the and during the open mic or whatever, and there was this female comic named Christy Miller who used to be around here a lot. I think she's New York based now. I actually haven't seen her in quite some time, but Mitzi used to give her spots. She was kind of like a, I don't know how to describe it, like I guess she's kind of like a rocker chick, like mm-hmm. East Coast rocker chick. She wear like leather pants and she looks like you'd see her at like a Van Halen concert or Def Leppard concert or something. And she would host the open mic. Back then it was usually Skippy Simon would host one night. We had open mic 3 nights a week then. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday was open mic. So we got paid $25, but we got 3 automatic spots a week. And the club was so dead that paid regulars wouldn't show up for Tuesday nights. So
have you been here on a Monday lately?
No, I haven't.
It's like... they kick comics out now because they got to fill the seats with the customers.
I saw a picture, I guess you probably posted online, of the open mic where it was like a full,
the front rows were all packed. The open micers are going up in front of 40 people now.
Yeah, see, that's crazy.
But I hosted a couple weeks ago and we kicked everyone out of the back. It was 150 paying customers.
Wow, during the open mic.
Yeah, like the friends and family. So employers are going up in rooms that we don't even see most of the time.
I mean, I remember looking out the first couple open mics I did and it was just the other comics who got picked out of the bucket.
Totally.
Like there wasn't a single audience member.
That's how it was for me. I went up the first open mic I did here was on Super Bowl Sunday and there was no audience and everyone was out front watching the game. There were no comics in the back. So it was literally just Eric Marino brought me up and it was 3 minutes in just an empty room.
Wow. Yeah, there was always a few of the other comics there judging and Gaylord Dingler and some of the other crazies, Mickey, that were always just around.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we got to do it 3 nights a week, so that was really nice. It was Skippy one night, Ari one night, and Christy Miller one night. So my parents came out. They were in town from Kansas, and I told them, you know, I lived in Manhattan Beach at the time. I said, yeah, I'm going to drive up and do this open mic if you guys want to come. They're like, yeah, we want to see you perform. I did impressions and stuff back then. It was terrible. And Christy Miller was hosting, and she brought me up. I think I was probably the fourth or fifth employee to go up that night. So they sat through the whole open mic. My dad loved Gaylord Dingler because he was so crazy. He thought that was so funny. And then the rest of them, the comics were just terrible. And Christy Miller brings me, oh, this next guy works here. And, he has a big hole in his mattress that he sticks his dick in, and that's as close to fucking anything as he's ever going to get.
Jesus.
I was just like, what? How is this? I remember just walking on stage already just like, I don't think there's any way I can win.
Mm-hmm.
My parents are two of the only, like, 7 people in the room. And so I went up, I did my terrible shtick about, did like a Harry Carey impression that was basically just a rip off of Will Ferrell's Harry Carey. And I did a impression of George W. Bush, that I called The Adventures of Young George W. It was basically just George W. Bush in college doing coke and partying and stuff. So I did my 3 minutes and got off stage. My parents, I think, were just like, this is why you stop going to KU and move to Los Angeles is for this. And I just remember Chris Miller, oh, that was fucking terrible. Mm-hmm. You're never going to see that guy again. Just being like, oh, man, this lady, how dare she?
I've bombed a lot in front of my parents. But the redeeming thing, the contest was big, and they came out here with me. And Bobby actually talked to my mom and was like, you should let him just move out here. That's so nice. That was big. And then the first time I went on the road with Pauly was Toledo, Ohio, and they live right by there, so they came and saw me. So that was like a big deal to them.
That's nice. Yeah, my parents came to Wichita, which is like a 3-hour drive from where they live, when I was with Pauly. Brought my grandma and a bunch
my
of family
grandparents
members.
Never seen me. And just, I don't think they will.
Yeah, all my grandparents are dead now, but one of them came out, saw me in Wichita. She was my cool grandma. Like, out of all my grandparents, she was the fun one. And you know, I told butt sex jokes and all the filthy things that my set as a 23-year-old was back then. And I remember telling it and then being like, I just told an anal sex joke in front of my grandma. And my grandma just waving both hands at the rest of the crowd in Wichita, so excited about it. She came up to me afterwards and said, sorry, it's kind of dirty. And she said, you sounded like your grandfather up there. He would have been so excited to watch you tell those jokes. And my grandpa was a Marine, fought in Korea, sailor's mouth on him for sure. Some of my fondest childhood memories are listening to my grandpa curse and scream and say quasi, if not fully racist things.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great. And then my grandma actually multiple times flew. She went to Australia and Korea and somewhere else towards the end of her life, like kind of bucket list things she wanted to go do. And she'd stop in LA with some of her friends for a day or two and shop here, basically. She'd always want to go to the Comedy Store, and I'd be like, are you sure you want to come there? The first time I brought her, she came, and it was like probably a random Wednesday or Thursday night, and I had to do a pop-in. I didn't get stage time really back then. Mm-hmm. So she stayed until like 1:15 with her friend Swanee to watch me go up on stage. And I remember getting off stage and Don Barris coming up and being like, hey, Darnell, you want to go get high? And you're like, oh, this is my grandma. She's like, you're Darnell's grandma? She's like, who's Darnell? He's like, this black son of a bitch, and pointed at me. And my grandma's so confused. And she's like, did you do heroin? You want to go do some heroin? She's like, I've never done heroin, but I'll try it. And look on Don's face, just like, that's so awesome. Like, oh, actually, I don't have any heroin. I'm sorry. You're too hardcore for me. She's, who was that man? That's Don. Don't worry about him. Yeah, performing in family is weird, especially when you're not comfortable.
I don't mind
comfortable.
It. I'm pretty comfortable around my parents, and then my brothers have seen me a bunch.
Yeah. I don't care now. I'm cool with that. My parents came out to Vegas when I was doing shows last year, and it was fun, but I was very uncomfortable my first couple of years. Especially the Pauly thing, I was really uncomfortable because it was one of those things where it's like, I don't want my parents to see me or Pauly.
My parents love Pauly.
That's so funny.
I don't think they've, up until recently, I don't think they'd ever seen a movie of his and didn't really know who he was. But since I've been touring
they
with him.
They took you with them, so.
Yeah, well, they go now to see him when even I'm not with him. They've seen him, I think, 2 or 3 times now without me being there.
Wow. And yeah, I don't think my parents would do that. I don't know that they'd go see comedy.
My parents love comedy. My dad took me to see Carlin when I was really young, and like, he raised me on Kinison and
classics.
And, yeah.
My parents are, they might be older than your parents, I guess, but they were like real into like Steve Martin and
my dad saw kind of Steve Martin back in like the 70s.
Yeah. So one of my parents, I don't know if it was one of their first dates, but one of their dates they went on early on when they first were together was to see Steve Martin at University of Kansas. Mm-hmm. And I remember them telling me that story several times, being like, all right, that sounds cool. I'd like to do that. So you work very little. You get paid good money? That sounds like a dream gig. I didn't realize there was like 10 years of being a huge loser before you got to make adequate money to...
And here we are.
To feel it. Here we are. Actually finally making living wages from main room shows, which is shocking.
Yeah.
Doing those doing those spots back in the day was brutal. So, I mean, you still were happy to get more than $15, but you'd be lucky to make $50.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's selling it out.
It took a little bit, but I've been doing the social media 3 years now, and it's hard to get a ticket anymore. I don't give away tickets. I started giving away tickets, and that helped a lot.
Right.
And then over time, it's just, you know, the lineups are too good.
Yeah. So we don't do giveaways anymore at all.
We do sometimes. It really just depends on the lineup now. But right. Tonight, like, we have 400 people downstairs, and they're all paying customers.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had the first incident where someone called me on a Thursday, wanted to come to a Saturday show. They wanted to bring like six people with them, or it was going to be six total. Mm-hmm. And just being like, yeah, all right. And I called up the store. They're like, hey, can I put these people on the list? And Luke Schwartz answered. He's like, no, it's full. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, show sold out. I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, I mean, they could come do standby. We might be able to get them in or something. I'm like, well, no, I'm not telling them to come up.
Yeah.
That's for real? He's like, yeah. I was like, wow, okay.
It's been fun to watch, man. Like, we took the Twitter from about 18,000, and I don't know how many of those were, like, paid followers, and we're, like, almost at 65,000, and, like, Instagram is...
Why aren't we verified?
I don't know. I don't know how to get verified.
We got to be able to talk to someone about that.
Who knows how... Someone let us know how to get verified.
How do we get the Comedy Store Twitter account verified?
We're the most followed club on Twitter and Instagram. We're not verified.
That's crazy. Yeah, I don't know how any of that stuff works. I'm terrible at all things computer.
I don't want to create another job for myself, so I haven't really cared. Like, people know it's us.
Yeah, I guess there's no fake
already, like, well, there's, like, 20 other comedy stores all over the planet.
Really?
There's, like, two in London.
I know the English ones.
Yeah, there's one in India. There's one in Australia.
Wow.
And I'm sure there's a few more that we don't even know about. And then there's just, like, places called the Comedy Store that aren't even...
It's just some place.
Yeah.
It's, like, a dive bar basement somewhere.
Yeah. There's a place that sells like books.
Classic. Get those great Shakespearean comedies. Mm-hmm. Who were your favorite comics when you were growing up? You said you saw Carlin and
that was and that stuff. Was big because Carlin was still like he was still like Mr. Conductor on Shining Time Station.
Yeah.
But I loved Hedberg was my favorite. Still is.
Interesting.
Loved Mitch Hedberg because I started like just doing one liners.
Yeah. Hedberg was great. And at the same time, one of the most frustrating successful comedians in the world because there was a lot of that going on. There was a lot of comics for a couple of years on the open mic circuit that just did everything Hedberg style.
Yeah.
And the difference was Mitch Hedberg was a brilliant comedian and these guys are probably accountants in Duluth now.
Yeah.
But they were certainly just trying to just straight rip his style. And it was, I just remember like hosting an open mic one time and it was, is that some shit little cafe in Studio City? And there's probably 10 comics on the show and six of them were Hedberg ripoffs. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being like, none of you are that clever to be doing this. And, I had the opportunity to meet him the one time and he was super cool and super nice. And I was hanging out with OJ Simpson at the time. And he was so amused by that. He was just like, what, are you friends with OJ? I was like,
you were hanging out with OJ Simpson and Mitch Hedberg came up to you.
Yeah. Hedberg with his mom and his girlfriend or wife, whoever it was. And, I think I've told this story probably on the podcast before. So if you're a regular listener, I apologize, but he walked up. I was on tour with Dice. We were in Miami and OJ Simpson came to our show and wanted to meet us after the show and Dice refused to meet him. He's like, no, that guy hates women. Completely oblivious to the fact that Dice, his act is just the ultimate misogynist, chauvinist. And, but in the real world is not like that.
Yeah, and, of course. But I mean, one of the first times I was here with my dad and my brother, when we drove out here together to move me here, I went up on stage and then Adam Sajan came over when he was working here and he goes, hey, Mr. Dice Clay wants to talk to you in the tunnel. And it was literally like the first time I went up when I'd moved out here. I wasn't an employee yet, just gotten there like hours ago. And Dice is down there. He's got two chicks on either side of him, and they got huge fake tits. And he goes, "Hey, kid, you're going to be all right. Just don't let the audience fuck with you, and you'll be good." And I was like, "Oh, thank you." And then he, like, ignored me. I was like, "Oh, okay, the conversation's over." But yeah. He went up, like, maybe an hour later, and my dad is grabbing my brother going, "Look, look, look, see those two women that are sitting there? They're going to hate this guy, but it's going to be so funny." And he went up and just murdered, and he walked the two women.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we, that same tour I was in, we were in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and Dice is doing a show on this Bull Dyke looking woman, head to toe in denim, feathered mullet haircut, stood up about 10, 15 minutes into his set. Was like, "You're disgusting." He's like, "Where the fuck do you think you are?" And he just started ripping into, "What'd you think you're going to see Jerry Steinfeld?" And he kept calling him Steinfeld. I thought it was so funny. And then he kept doing his impression. A lot of people don't know that Dice started as an impersonator, so he still has like the ability to kind of mimic people. Mm-hmm. And this lady's getting all mad and trying to get her ticket and stuff, and Dice just wouldn't give up. "Well, what'd you think was going to happen tonight? You were going to come see Andrew Dice Clay and I was going to do observational jokes? Asshole people! Who are these asshole people?" It was like the worst Seinfeld ever, though, but so funny. She got a man left, and he's like, "No, we're going to fucking wait for you to go, because God forbid I offend you anymore." He's going, "You are the strangest looking dude I've ever seen." People just loving it. But yeah, he refused to meet OJ, and I was super excited, so I was totally down to meet OJ. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming those are our fans yelling outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was sitting at a bar with OJ, and I sat with OJ for about 30 minutes talking, and towards the end, Mitch Hedberg walked up, and I turned and was like, "Holy fuck, it's Mitch Hedberg." He was like, "Hey, man, we watched your show tonight, and you know, it was really funny, and I wanted to introduce you to my parents." And I was like, "Wow." So I think it was his girlfriend. I don't know if they're married or not, mm-hmm. but I met his girlfriend and his mom. And then he was like, "Hey, we saw you standing earlier today in front of Hooters. There's a Hooters in Coconut Grove where the Improv in Miami is. And it's like maybe a block away from the club." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, yeah. How'd you know it was me?" And he's like, "Because I was like, hey, look how lonely that guy standing by himself in front of Hooters looks." And we all laughed. So I just remember being like, yeah, all right. That kind of sucks. But I was definitely standing in front of Hooters earlier. It's like, man, what am I going to do? I have nothing to do. I'm just hanging out by myself in front of Hooters. And then he kind of cornered me and asked me about a bag of pills because I was staying in the Improv's condo, mm-hmm. at the Four Seasons. They have two different suites, more or less. And I was staying in the one that he had been staying in. It was the headliner's suite because Dice refused to stay at the Four Seasons because he said the Four Seasons is not a 5-star hotel. So he stayed somewhere else down in South Beach. I stayed in the headliner thing. And I found a bag of pills in the drawer next to the bed. And he said it was his vitamins and asked if he could pick them up. And I was like, sure. So I gave it to him. And then when he passed away like 6 months later, 7 months later, I remember being like, man, maybe I shouldn't have given him those vitamins. But I believe he died of a heroin overdose.
Yeah, so. I think it was something to do with an overdose and like heart failure.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was one of those cool instances where I was stuck in between crazy worlds of someone I really respected and a murderer / football star.
But it's a great TV show.
I mean, Mitch, OJ, and me would have been the biggest show on Netflix for sure. He, you know, OJ, super huge comedy fan. You never, like, maybe you would guess, but one of the most bizarre fan experiences I ever had where it was like, OJ Simpson's my biggest fan. Mm-hmm. Remembered all my jokes, wanted to talk to me about my bits, what he thought was funny, what he thought could be better, what I could add, just stuff from like, is OJ punching up my hilarious shtick about being from Kansas? Yeah, it's one of those few experiences. You've been on the road with anyone other than Pauly, or is Pauly pretty much your...
Pauly's my bread and butter, but I've done some stuff with Taylor Williamson that's been a lot of fun, and just like random one-nighter stuff with other guys like Del Rey and Steve Trevino and stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it's interesting when you go on the road with headliners, just the places I guess you would never expect you were ever going to go.
Yeah.
What's the worst place you've had to go with Pauly?
God. I mean, I kind of love it all. I love the middle of the country, but we did the first ever comedy show in Makokana, Iowa.
Wow.
And
I grew up fairly close to Iowa. I've been to Iowa lots of times. My dad grew up in Bettendorf. I have no idea where that place is.
I don't either. Said. And I've been there.
Makokana, Iowa. I hope we have listeners there. We're like, hey,
but honestly,
Hollywood.
The worst place was Vegas for me because I was there by myself and you do so many shows and
they're
improv. Yeah, I did the improv and I would do it again in a second, but
I wouldn't.
I would want to go with somebody because I was just by myself for 7 days in Vegas and I don't gamble. I don't drink.
I had the same experience 2 years ago.
You're just hanging out.
I was like, you know what? I'm never going to do this again.
It's 110 degrees.
It was terrible.
Got nothing to do.
I was there in November, so the weather was okay, but same thing. I didn't want to do it. I don't gamble. I can't drink anymore. I didn't smoke pot anymore. It was miserable. I was with, an older black dude who I think he has MS and his comedy act was very aimed towards that, or it was almost like a one man show more than it was comedy. And a guy named Ron Morey, who's real nice dude. And his comedy is just, you know, he's kind of like that Frazier Smith type of comic, like cutting edge in 91 probably.
Mm-hmm.
But it was miserable. I didn't really hang out with those guys. And I don't have a lot of money to be spending on stuff. And they were like, well, you know, you can just eat at the employee cafeteria, which was the worst place on earth.
It was the same food.
It was like
all three meals for 7 days.
Yeah. It basically felt like you were in a prison. The way the seating was, it was like racially divided.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And then just like me sitting by myself looking around like, am I really going to eat Fruit Loops again?
Did you host when you were there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you go up and you do the 5 minutes and they hate
10,
you.
Yeah.
And then you come back and you're like, why are you back here doing 10 more minutes?
Just bring up the next guy so we can leave.
Yeah.
And the shows were not popular because none of us were famous. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure every comic thinks they're the best, but I feel like I was considerably better than the other two guys, which always is weird. A couple times it's happened to me in Vegas where I featured or emceed and I was definitely funnier than them and you could just feel the resentment of the headliner.
I haven't felt that way. I didn't feel that way in Vegas.
Oh, it was terrible.
Feature and the headliner were great and they killed. I struggled immensely, especially the first night. Like they hated me and I hated the fact that I had to wait 20 minutes to go back up and bomb for 10 more minutes.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was okay, but it was kind of like Comedy Store back in the day. There was the biggest crowd we had was probably 30 people.
That's
and that
crazy.
Was Friday or Saturday night.
I remember one of the first nights I was hanging out here, the show didn't start until like 10:15. It was supposed to start at 9, but there weren't 6 people in the audience.
Right.
So 4 people hung out for an hour just waiting, and then 2 more people wandered in, and like the middle of the show opened the show. A lot of people were just like, fuck this, I'm leaving.
Yeah, yeah. There was plenty of years where I would call in and eventually I moved 2 blocks away, so I would just show up anyway. But when I lived in Manhattan Beach, I would call in, just be like, what are we looking at? I'd have a spot at like 12:30 or 12:45. I'd be like, oh, we've got 7 people right now. And I'd be like, all right, in 2 hours, that's going to be maybe 2 or 3 people. And be like, man, as much as I want to go up there, I'm just not going to drive up there to perform for that. But yeah, it was bad, man. One of the nights I'm trying to be a good host and, you know, let them know stuff the club wants you to tell them and all that. And, you know, I say, we got 2 great comics coming up. You guys are going to like them. And there was probably 16 to 20 people in the room at that point. And table 4, right in the front row, stands up, starts walking. I go, wow, did I really walk you this early in the show? I'd only been on stage for like 2 minutes. And the guy was like, we're supposed to be at Rita Rudner. And I was like, oh, and she's performing in the big showroom upstairs. And I go, oh, well, if you want, I can just I can do the Rita Rudner joke. I remember from Comedy Central in the 90s. And he's like, what? And I went into, how come you mix water and flour and it makes paste, but then you add sugar and it makes cake? Where did all the paste go? The guy was like, is that really her joke? I go, yeah, that was really on the Comedy Central commercial for Premium Blend for a solid 3 or 4 years. He was like, well, we might be back if it's that bad. And I just remember being like, I probably shouldn't have shit on the big room performer. But then they didn't come back. They obviously enjoyed Rita Rudner enough that they didn't want to see me and Ron Mori and a guy talk about his dead daughter and his multiple sclerosis as a headliner.
This business is humbling.
Yeah, it was bad enough. And I don't like Vegas in general. The hotel is kind of scummy that you stay at for that show.
I had a nice room. Like, it wasn't the side of it that I didn't like. It was, I eventually had to stop eating the cafeteria food because it was just killing me. Mm-hmm. But it was just the loneliness of it.
Yeah, like, it was brutal.
I've gone to terrible, like, I would never live in this place with Paulie, but it's always a lot of fun because you're with him and you're usually with someone else and you have people, you're just having fun and clowning on the place you're at. And that's
right.
You know, you make experiences and you have, you know, you get jokes out of it. But Vegas, it was just, I'm going to kill 15 minutes by doing a show tonight. What am I going to do with 23 hours and 45 minutes? Yep.
Yeah, my parents actually flew out for the weekend, and that was the best. And we did stuff like we drove out to Red Rocks, mm-hmm. like left Vegas.
See, my parents were going to come out, but they booked the wrong weekend.
Damn it.
Yeah, so I ended up driving there, and we did like the Hoover Dam and stuff, and it was still fun.
Right.
I'm thinking about maybe moving to the outskirts by the lake out there, but
oh, that'd be cool.
But yeah, I was there alone, and that was by far the worst experience. Not all the shows were bad; some of them were good. Like, it wasn't. I would do it again because I need the stage time, I need the money, and I like performing. But I would want to have someone there with me, or I'd lose my fucking mind.
Yeah, I told her. The girl that booked it, that I'd only do it if I could headline. Otherwise, it wouldn't be worth it to me. And mm-hmm. she's like, yeah, I mean, I don't think they'll book you as a headliner because what's his name? The original owner of the Improvs.
Bud Friedman.
Bud Friedman still owns that one. He still runs it. So he's basically putting headliners that are guys he knew from when he was prime comedy club owner.
Helping them out. And that's good.
And that's cool. Yeah, good for that. And the Lake Tahoe gig is kind of fun too. I prefer that over the Vegas one.
I haven't done that, but I just did Reno for the first time.
How was that?
It was actually pretty cool.
What room did you do in Reno? Did you do Silver Legacy, or did you do that one guy's?
It was
comedy,
the Pioneer Underground.
Yeah, I was gonna say
the Reno Tahoe Comedy Club. Yeah, and it was cool. That was with Taylor, and we had a good time. But like, I don't know, that city. It's another place where you're like, oh, there's nothing to do here. It looks flashy and fun, but honestly, I don't like casinos. I think they're...
Yeah, it's basically just a gross hotel if you don't gamble.
Yeah.
When I was in Reno, it was years ago, and I went skiing, so that made it kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
We went up to North Star, and so I did that during the day for the 3 days, or I was there for 3 nights, 2 days I did that, and then drove back after the last show on Saturday night or whatever it was. But yeah, I just don't like the road. I gotta be honest. I really like it. I don't like going places. I don't like traveling. I don't like being in most of America. I escaped Kansas mm-hmm. and like going to places like that drive me crazy. I went to Nashville, did Zanies with Rent Is Easy like a month ago, and shows were fun, and Nashville's, I mean, it's as cool as the South can get.
Yeah.
Basically, but same thing, which is kind of, you know, me and Steve are both in our mid late 30s. So we're not really going out and partying and all that stuff. I'm just sitting in a comedy condo all day, kind of like we were talking about. We're just like, what are we doing?
No, I go out and do stuff. And Paulie's usually really active. So he has like a schedule that we follow. But I like the road. I don't mind traveling. I don't know. There's something about Vegas.
Yeah.
Vegas is the only thing I'm kind of uneasy about doing, but I would do it because I want the work, because I'm young and I need it. But I really like the road. I like hotels, even shitty hotel rooms. I like just being somewhere and then going somewhere else. It's fun.
My hotel room in Vegas was faced out over that little outdoor music venue place they have.
Mm-hmm.
And I must have heard Marky Mark and the Funky Bunches. Y'all ready for this? Or whatever his song was. Probably 40 times in the 6-7 days I was there. I was just I'm going to kill somebody. And when they're like, why did you murder 40 people, Rick? I'm like, it's that goddamn Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. And about every 2.5 hours, they would play again. I'd just be like, no. I watched a lot of Forensic Files when I was in Vegas. That's the kind of excitement that I get into out there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never had a good, I had one good experience in Vegas. I did shows with Dice, and it was still to this day the biggest crowds I performed for.
How big?
It was like 2,000, maybe 2,300.
Damn.
It was a 2,700 seat theater, I think, and it was not sold out, but it was pretty close. And the Mamma Mia Theater, he used to do Mandalay Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool. It was so much fun. He taught me a lot and, you know, kind of set me up to understand, like, this is going to be different than doing a show in the original room. And
yeah.
You got to take your time. Any joke you tell, it's going to take twice as long because you got to pause more. You got to give them a chance to catch up. You got to let the energy catch the back of the room before you move on. And otherwise, you're going to be talking over laughter. And it was really fun. We had a great Spinal Tap moment, too, where we were trying to go from Dice's suite to the theater through the back backstage and the behind the scenes walking with security guards taking us. And then we totally got lost and ended up walking out into a shipping dock. And then the guy being like, I'm just going to call someone to take us. And the guy showed up on a little golf cart, drove us all the way around the building. We had gone completely the wrong way. It's like, wow, this kind of stuff really happens. This is amazing. But I loved everywhere I went with Dice. Paulie, I didn't have as great a time. I didn't really get that. The first couple times I went places with him, we hung out a lot. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know. I think he just didn't like me maybe because it stopped being that. And then it was just like me stuck in Brownsville, Texas, waiting for Paulie to call me at like 5 or 6. Be like, dude, meet me in the lobby at 7. I'd do the radio early on with him, and then stop getting that invite. But some of the stuff you're talking about, the brotherhood and the bonding, a lot of the shows I did, Steve Simone was my roommate, so we got to be really close friends. And I don't know if he still takes a bodyguard, but he had Terrell was his bodyguard for a while.
No, it's usually just two of us.
Yeah.
Just the comics on the show, or like I've gone with his assistant before.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, about half the time it was Simone, and the other half the time it was this guy, Terrell, who was super cool and was fun, except for Terrell was always pulling chicks. He's like a 6'8" black dude, and girls just loved him. So I spent a lot of time sitting in hotel lobbies waiting for Terrell to get done handling business. But yeah, I never reaped the benefits of ladies on the road. And so when comics are like, well, that's part of the fun, I'm like, I very rarely experienced that. And part of it now, I think, is, you know, I'm married, so I'd rather stay home with my wife than go to Tuscaloosa or any of these places that a lot of comics have to go to. So I don't know. Do you have a podcast of your own?
No podcast.
Rare in this day and age to find a comic who's not podcasting for nobody.
No time.
I had a separate podcast for a while that I think maybe 3 people ever listened to. And after a while, it was like me and Matt Nost used to do it. I'm like, why do we do this? He's like, I don't have any idea why we're doing this. But I like doing this one. This one's fun.
Yeah, this one's good.
Who? What comics do you watch? What comics do you like now? Who inspires you still?
Burr's number one.
He's great, isn't he?
Yeah, I make my way here when I know he's going to be here.
Yeah,
absolutely. He's the best. I really like.
I got into an argument with some comics recently about Bill Burr and Louis C.K. And both of them are obviously great. But
yeah,
I prefer Bill Burr.
I do as well.
They're telling me I was crazy. And no. I was like, nope. Watch them both a lot.
Mm-hmm.
one of them you're going to see doing different stuff, and the other one you're going to see doing the same stuff. And
yeah, I've seen Burr here 100 times, and a lot of times, multiple times a night in different rooms within minutes of each other. And the thing I love about it, besides the material just being better than anything I could ever hope to write,
yeah,
he does different order of everything. He usually doesn't do the same jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
In the rooms, he'll go and do 15 minutes in the OR, and then go up to the belly room, do 10 minutes, and it's completely different.
It's one of the best things that I always liked about him.
Yeah.
In general, that's kind of how it goes, because when you're a comic and you hang out at comedy clubs, you see a lot of the same comics. And it gets to the point, even if you love that comic, you're basically watching reruns.
You can recite them.
Yeah.
But with him, it's like he'll go
different.
And now he'll try a different tag, or the punchline is completely different, or the setup is completely different. And
right.
You're watching him literally experiment every time he goes up. I've never seen him tell the same joke the same way.
Yeah, he's great. Dave Attell was like that. He used to come in here a lot more 10 years ago or whatever, but I could watch him go up a couple rooms or two nights in a row and not see him do the same joke.
Yeah.
And be like, wow, that's amazing. So Burr, any other guys that...
I mean, there's...
Or girls.
There's a lot.
I mean, I know you're a misogynist, woman hater, but...
I'm not, man. I love Sarah Silverman. I really like Maria Bamford, the Comedians of Comedy, all those guys, Patton and Maria and Zach and Brian Posehn, they influenced me a lot. That's kind of how I got into stand-up, was watching their documentary and going, hey, I want to do that. I want to be with friends and go on the road. And
what are you, a nerd?
I am.
You just mentioned the nerdiest comics ever, man. I only like the really cool guys, Dane Cook, Chris D'Elia, and huge fan of Josh Nassar. Those are pretty much the big three for me.
They're great performers, though.
At the end of the day, I guess. I don't know.
They're great performers. And people shit on them all the time. And you know, maybe they're not writing jokes that are influencing you to change the way you live your life like a Burr, but...
Are we talking about Dane?
We're talking about Dane or Chris. They're phenomenal. They're the best performers I've ever seen. They connect with crowds in a way that I don't think I'd ever be capable of you know, connecting with them. And they kill every time they go up. It's undeniable.
I like Chris. I think Chris is funny.
Chris is great.
I don't have the same feelings for Dane, but he's kind of been a dick to me over the years.
So. I haven't really had too many run-ins with him, but I'm a comedy fan first. Most of the time I don't feel like a comic. I feel more like a fan. And I collect comedy records, CDs, vinyl, and all that stuff. And I go and I see shows, and I've paid for shows within the last few months.
It's insane.
Yeah. I just love stand-up.
You're a man that loves the craft.
I love the craft, and because I didn't have a bad childhood, and I didn't have anything happen to me.
Me too.
I got into it because it's fun, you know?
I always really felt like, you know, my parents, they really hurt me as a comedian by giving me a great life.
My parents were so supportive.
Yeah.
Of everything. Said I wanted to be a baseball player when I was, you know, younger, and I wasn't going to be. I was five feet tall. My dad built a batting cage in the backyard.
We were on the same path. I was positive I was going to be a second baseman for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and ended up not working out.
So, I watched them, and I was like, this is what I had to do, because I was going to be a writer, and then I decided I was going to start writing jokes, and that kind of led me to stand-up. And then there had always been the thing where, you know, my dad... let me listen to stuff when I was too young to listen to stuff. And he'd watch South Park with us when we were, you know, 13, 14 years old, because he thought it was funny.
Yeah, my house was the liberal free zone in the middle of conservative Kansas.
Yeah.
So my house was always where me and my friends were hanging out, watching rated R movies and listening to anything from, you know, old Pryor albums to Robin Williams, old albums, even Adam Sandler CDs from the 90s.
They're all going to laugh at you.
Yep. I was listened to almost to the point that the CD no longer worked.
And we had the cassette.
Nice. It was when I got a CD player, I was probably, I don't know, sixth, seventh grade, maybe something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The first two CDs I got were Pearl Jam 10 and Adam Sandler, They're All Going to Laugh at You. And I didn't have a job or money, so I couldn't buy another CD until my birthday the following year. So for 4 months, it was either Pearl Jam or Adam Sandler. That was how I was going to waste my time, which was glorious. I have no complaints about that either. Wow. So then, were there shows? Were there South Park, that's kind of your generation. You're more South Park, I guess, than Simpsons.
I'm kind of in between the two. I came in when it was like the golden era of the Simpsons.
Right.
In the early to mid 90s.
Right.
And South Park was...
I wasn't a South Park fan until the movie came out. Mm-hmm. The movie got me on board. And now I think they do brilliant shows.
Oh, yeah, they're doing what they're doing.
It's amazing.
It's bad, it's still really good. It's better than anything else.
Yeah. And there's at least four or five episodes every season that are just so spectacular and what they get away with and what mm-hmm. they're willing to say. And those guys are funny, man. They really do crush it. Mm-hmm. I was never really a Family Guy person. There's some episodes I really liked.
The original seasons. Yeah. And then after it came back, it kind of just fell off for me.
Yeah, I'm really only familiar with the first two. Mm-hmm. Some of them were funny, but... you got anything going on now? You got stuff you want to promote at all? You doing shows anywhere?
Not really. I'm just here.
You're at the Comedy Store.
Yeah, I'm just working.
That's perfect because I hate promoting other clubs on this podcast.
Follow the Comedy Store.
Yeah, follow the Comedy Store.
Me. Say hi.
It's Brenton on there. He's the reason why you're informed about what's going on here instead of stupid gimmick giveaways and the garbage that was going on pre-Brenton.
They set everything up. Alf and Amy did a good job and they set everything up. I just figured out a way to connect it. You know, they put the puzzle out there and then I put the pieces together. So everyone had an important part. So
it's just that Brenton is really humble and doesn't want to admit that he changed it for the better in a good way. So it's very appreciated. It's very nice to be able to be informed about what's going on here, and you do a good job doing
that
without the crap and the clutter that a lot of comedy clubs posting memes of.
Yeah, I don't get why they do that.
Stupid
things.
You
don't need to be funny. You got shows.
Yeah, they're just people try too hard. It's my biggest pet peeve on earth is people trying to do anything. Just do.
Yeah.
If you're a comedy club, it's not expected that the building is going to tell hilarious jokes.
Yeah. Like I was on a show, but you were on it too. I'm pretty sure it was a month ago. It was like Bill Burr and Rogan and D'Elia advertised. And I think maybe Jeselnik and then Natasha was a pop in. And then Louis CK and Chris Rock both came in.
Sure.
And it's like, we don't need to be funny about that. Just tell everybody, hey, these are the guys that are going to be here. So you should come.
Yeah. It's a full on revival, man.
It's very simple.
Very fun time to be at the Comedy Store. So come by, check out a show, see Brenton.
Yeah, stay late. I go on around 2. come say hi.
Be a party all-star. Stick it out to the end. You won't regret it.
My favorite, by the way, when I'm driving in to do my set like at 12:30 and they're changing the marquee for tomorrow night's show.
You already know.
Yeah.
You say, oh, when am I on? Tomorrow is when I'm on.
Yeah.
Come out, guys. 8433 Sunset Boulevard. If you live elsewhere in the country or the world, make a pilgrimage. Come out, see a show. You're going to see more here than you're going to see anywhere else. Yeah.
And stop asking us to stream the shows. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's not going to happen because no comics want to give up the artistic value of
It's the last place comedy. That's really free.
Yeah, it is. It's. I remember they tried to get us to sign something like 6 months ago, and everyone was like, I'm not signing that. Why would I do that? Come check out a show. I mean, you literally will see a year's worth of headlining comedians in one night, and it's all the time. Mm-hmm. So come check it out. Listen to older episodes of the podcast if you haven't. Catch up. And thanks for being on, Brenton. It was
thanks
great talking with you.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, come see a show. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you again. Hopefully, I'll get more guests to show up sooner. So keep your ears out there. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.